The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
There is nothing better than lifetime appointments to power. Okay? Just keep track. We want to start a list. George Orwell's Animal Farm, Winnie the Pooh, and the letter N. What do they all have in common? Well, they're just the beginnings of things that have been banned in China this week. Why? Because they promote the criticism of Chinese President Xi Jinping. Right? The letter N, hello?
It does?
He is, believe it or not, it does. He has announced that he is extending his presidency into a lifetime appointment. He's the first to do so since Mao. And, you know, he's worried that reading Animal Farm will make citizens question communism. And you know what? When the Chinese get a lifetime ruler, it always works out well. Winnie the Pooh apparently is a problem because there is a specific image of the bear clutching honey, you know, and next to the quote, "Find the thing that you love and stick with it." It must have some other meaning in China. Apparently, he is spouting cynical commentary about President Xi's indefinite position. Now, the letter N, apparently, not sure on this, but apparently is used as a code letter if you're printing something that is against the government. So you can't use the letter N anymore. That caused some real problems, you know, online. For instance, this would be the Glenn Beck Show. Yeah, on the internet, you know, the use of all the letters of the alphabet is probably needed. So they unbanned that one pretty quickly. Now, this isn't new to the Chinese people. President Xi has been, you know, periodically censoring specific things for years. He controls the media. He controls the government in almost every aspect of Chinese citizens' lives. But it's about to get much worse because he's now a lifelong dictator. And as I said before, that usually doesn't work out all so well for the people.
It's Friday, March 2nd. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Adam Foss is a new friend, and he's the founder and executive director of Prosecutor Impact. He is a juvenile justice reformer, and he is somebody who will challenge your thinking, and I think is an honest, open guy that wants to really have a dialogue. And I called him earlier this week and asked about what was happening in Parkland High School, because the last time Adam was on, we talked about how we needed to be able to get kids so they are not going into the justice system. What can we do to keep kids out of the justice system? I read about Parkland High School had The Promise, which was kind of along those same lines. And I wanted to know from Adam, is this the same kind of program? And if so, what's gone wrong here in Florida? Welcome to the program, Adam. How are you?
Glad I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back.
It's good to talk to you. All right. So as somebody who believes that the justice system is flawed and that we are putting we're just putting people into a system that just is broken. However, I want to make sure that the bad guys, the people who can really do damage, also aren't given so many chances like this kid was in Florida. Can you tell me what you know about the system of The Promise and where it failed, if you think it did?
Sure. The rhetoric right now about this having anything to do with the failure of school discipline policies is, to me, like politicizing something that started back at Columbine, where in the wake of Columbine, we instituted zero tolerance policies to prevent mass shootings in schools. What those zero tolerance policies did a really good job of was creating the school to prison pipeline, which is one of the many things that have contributed to mass incarceration, but certainly disproportionately affects young people of color and poor kids with special needs and disabilities in school. because it gave teachers and administrators the tool of arrest, as opposed to other things that we grew up with to discipline school kids. That's not what happened here. In fact, Mr. Cruz was suspended and expelled from his schools. There was, mm-hmm. it wasn't the reticence of teachers to discipline this kid. It was the failure of people to see what was going on when he was out of school on social media, in his home, and in the FBI.
So do you have any idea, being a prosecutor, you know, the sheriff has said, well, you know, we couldn't do anything. Was this because there's speculation that the school district was trying to, you know, not have their record tainted, et cetera, and not have these problems and sort of sweep them under the rug. Does that seem logical to you, or does that seem like what you know? Does that seem like that could have happened? And do prosecutors have a right to go in with this particular kid and say, okay, there's something going on here. We need to make sure he's away from guns, et cetera, et cetera.
Prosecutors don't have a right to do anything. The government doesn't have a right to do anything unless there's, you know, reasonable suspicion or probable cause or somebody makes a complaint. And to me, there were several people making complaints long before Parkland. He was suspended or expelled from two different private schools. He was 19 when he was in this school. People knew who he was coming in. And from the investigation, looks like there was plenty of evidence on social media of his intention. It was literally this kid crying for help, but there were plenty of red flags that were missed somewhere along the line. What's ironic to me is that being a prosecutor in an urban city, we use social media all the time to target quote-unquote at-risk youth for their behavior on social media. I don't think that this is much as a school district trying to sweep something under the rug. I think it is the disparate treatment of children from different socioeconomic and different racial backgrounds coming to a really tragic end.
Could that be just because of the different communities? I mean, this, you know, this is a community that, you know, cares about their image a great deal. And so they're not looking at the social media as they should, or is this, you just do believe that it's just race?
I don't want to say that it's just race. I see lots of kids who are not black or brown getting swept up into the system because they have special needs, they have disabilities, they have behavior problems in school. I certainly think it's more of a socioeconomic and a race issue. With regard to the image of the community, we know that lots of things go on in wealthy more affluent communities that don't get reported.
Yes.
And so this is just opening a wider conversation about a cost-benefit analysis. How much do we care about the way that we look, and what are we going to do to sacrifice?
Yeah, to me, that's what this feels like. That it's a community, or some leaders in the community, or school, or sheriffs. I don't know what, but some reason they had to. You know, let's just kind of sweep this under the rug. Let's not. We don't need this kind of image, and that's a real problem.
Yeah, the thing that I've been sort of like chewing on about this is what if it swings the other way? And now every time a kid says something on social media that is concerning, every time a kid is acting in a way in school, what does the other side look like? So we have to be really careful, but certainly there must be middle ground to come up with interventions that are short of arrest or short of suspension and expulsion because of what we know happens to kids when they're suspended one time. There must be some middle ground to take care of young people who are expressing these things and stop mass shootings from happening before they start.
Isn't there, Adam, it seems like there's a line here because, you know, what you're doing, what this program is trying to do, a lot of this has come along with really positive results and certainly really positive intent. Where you're taking people, instead of, you know, they make one mistake, you're not throwing them in jail, or they're not having to necessarily interact with the legal system. And there's possibly a risk where people running a school might overlook someone who, or I guess not overlook, but punish within the school system instead of taking them to through the legal system if there was a real problem. But in this particular case, isn't just the number of incidents enough that it would overwhelm any rational idea that you should only deal with this person with in-school sort of punishments? And it had to blow up into something bigger because of the scale and also the types of things he was doing, things like bringing weapons to school and things like that.
Absolutely. And I don't understand how it got to the point that it did, where, you know, even the day before the shooting happened, the kid was posting on his social media that this was happening.
This is crazy.
The FBI did get a report. But this is such an aberration, both in sort of like the level of detail that the kid sort of like laid breadcrumbs to the fact that he's going to do this, and to obviously the carnage that he wreaked, that I'm reluctant to politicize it in any way to say we need to make stricter school discipline, because we've been trying to undo that, the construction of the school to prison pipeline, because of that.
So I have to tell you, Adam, I am right with you. I think this is such an aberration of just a series of missed, not red flags, gigantic car flags.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Those flags that car dealers have. They were such huge flags. The one I heard about just the other day was when he was walking out, he had changed his clothes, gotten rid of the guns, and he's walking out. One of the students said that she looked at him and said, "Oh my gosh, when I heard there was a shooting, I just thought it was you." And I thought it was so prevalent in the school that some classmate thought, "Oh, I know who's doing it." That's incredible.
Yeah. And the irony is, in places like that, in places where, you know, we really should be thinking about where are these shootings happening? What kind of schools are they happening? And what kind of communities are they happening? And you go into those schools and there aren't metal detectors at every entrance. There aren't police lining the hallways. There aren't, cruisers waiting out back to take kids to court because they've thrown a pencil in the classroom. But in inner cities and in other poor communities that I've been to around the country, where there have been zero mass shootings, there are metal detectors at every single entrance to prevent kids from bringing weed and slingshots into school.
Mm-hmm. So,
and so again, I think this goes back to your point about imaging and what we're really talking about in this country is much larger than school to prison pipeline. It is exactly what you're driving at.
We're talking to Adam Foss, founder and executive director of Prosecutor Impact. Adam, I am gravely concerned that our country is not having a dialogue about kids that are feeling, I don't know, alone, worthless, meaningless.
Yes.
There's something happening, and it has nothing to do with guns or school or anything. There's something happening with kids, and we're not having that conversation, and we better have that conversation or it's going to get worse.
Well, you think about when I was a kid or when you were a kid and you got picked on at school, you could just go home and everything would be okay. You know, you'd be sad and you might not have a lot of friends at home, but you could shelter yourself from sort of the inundation of reminders of how little you matter in this world. And I can't ignore the fact that there's been an uptick in this and in suicides and in hate crimes.
Big time.
In the wake of sort of what social media has done to our planet, where you literally cannot escape all the bad things that kids feel about themselves and all the ideas about what to do about it.
Adam, thank you for having a reasonable conversation with us. I appreciate it.
Always happy to do so with you, Matt.
I saw this about the promise, and I thought, I know that's going to start getting blame on it, and it's not what you're talking about, because this is there were too many warning signs. Thank you so much, Adam. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Glenn.
You bet.
Talk to you soon.
You can follow him on Twitter at Prosecutor Impact with no A,
or Adam John Foss on Twitter as well. I mean, that's the thing. You can't incompetence doesn't this is a good idea underneath, right? And it's just because there's a lot of incompetence doesn't mean that the idea goes away. The bottom line here is that this is the most preventable mass shooting in U.S. history.
I think so, too.
The idea that this is the one inspiring a gun debate is strange. Just in fact, there were so many breadcrumbs, so many ways to stop this, and it just didn't happen.
Glenn Beck.
I want to play a bit of this Matt Bevin answer to a woman who was in Washington, D.C. He had just spoken to the president with the governor's conference, and this woman asked him, we've got to do something. Listen.
How do you reconcile the children's lives are most important with the comments you've made to the media about it's naive and premature to talk about gun control and that it's culture and not guns that is causing these horrible things?
I'll tell you exactly how I reconcile that. First of all, a month ago in Kentucky, we had a very similar situation. Made a very concerted effort to make sure that we removed the media circus from the healing process. So within 24 to 48 hours, you're probably not even aware, most people aren't, that I had a 15-year-old come into a school in Kentucky last month and shoot 16 children at point-blank range, two of whom died. A set of twins were both shot and taken to a level one trauma center. They lived. This is very real to me. I've sat with these families. You also probably are not aware of the fact that I buried my oldest child. Died under different circumstances, but went to school and didn't come home. She was 17 years old. I know exactly, not exactly, it's not possible to know exactly what another person's going through, but I know exactly what it feels like to bury your oldest child. I know what the impact is on a family. I don't come at this with a sense of sympathy, but empathy. The point that I've made that's been largely misconstrued, I'll reaffirm with you and tell you exactly why it comes from, where it comes from. This idea, just as solving this issue is able to be solved with a single law or rule or change, is naive and delusional. And so we shouldn't allow ourselves to entertain naive and delusional thoughts. It is part of a broader construct, just as this issue is. And the point that I made, that I'll reiterate, is that if we think that a part of what we are seeing is not a cultural problem, we're kidding ourselves. And the point that I've made is this. What has shifted in the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years? It's not the percentage of guns that we find in homes. And you can give me a statistic that there's now more guns. Fair enough. I'll submit that that may be true. I'm not going to argue with you. But the reality is there's fewer homes that have guns in them than there were 50 years ago when children didn't walk into schools and shoot themselves and shoot each other. That's a fact. You can confirm that. But I'll tell you this. When I was a kid, kids brought guns to school. Kids brought guns on the school bus. Kids brought guns to school in their own vehicles. Kids didn't shoot each other with them. So some things have not changed. What has changed? We as a culture, as a society, and it's very germane to this topic as well.
Stop. Let him get to this point when we come back. What has changed? He makes a list next.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So, Matt Bevin was in Washington, D.C. By the way, welcome to Pat Gray on the program. Matt Bevin was on, he was talking to a woman who said, you know, how can you possibly say that this doesn't have anything to do with guns? And he says, how can you possibly say this doesn't have something to do with our culture, with something that is happening inside of our kids? And he talks a little bit about guns. And then he says, here's what's really going on. What has changed? There are more guns, but not more guns per household. You know, there are more households without guns than ever before. So kids, when I was growing up, when he was growing up, kids would come to school with guns. We did. I mean, kids would go hunting and then they would leave their gun, you know, in their truck and it would be unlocked.
They always had gun racks
always,
in their truck.
Always had gun racks.
There was always a rifle in it.
Right. And this is just the way things were. So what has changed? Listen to what he says.
What has changed? We as a culture, as a society, and it's very germane to this topic as well. We don't value human life like we did. We remove increasingly respect for the dignity of other people. You look at how rampant pornography is, the degradation and disrespect for women and for human life in general. It is so systemic. People of our age have not been exposed like our children have been. There's not a child in America that hasn't been exposed to pornography. I guarantee you, if they're above the age of 12. That's a fact. It is so systemic, it's horrific. And it desensitizes us at every turn. And so we're desensitized to the value and dignity of human life. We're desensitized through, and this is to the heart of what I said that you seem to take exception with, is that through violent video games, where literally you are encouraged, and you can roll your eyes all you want, ma'am, but I will say this. You explain to me the value of a game that encourages somebody to go back and finish them off, where you get points for kill counts and you slaughter people. We're desensitizing people to the value of life.
So he goes on, and check it out on The Blaze. It's amazing. He goes on for another 4 minutes, and he talks about different things. And this woman keeps rolling her eyes and is, you know, is not open. And he says at the end, I don't understand how you can say you're open-minded, and yet you will reject everything that I'm saying here and blame it all on guns. I don't understand it.
Yeah. We're broken. And it's interesting because President Trump yesterday met with video game industry leaders. And most people have just dismissed that already. They've moved on past that discussion where that's nothing to do with it. And I was really impressed that he took the time to talk to these guys about exactly what Matt Bevin's talking about. Is there some correlation? Now, a lot of research says no. I just don't believe that.
A lot of research says yes.
Yeah.
A lot of research says yes, that your brain is not formed fully and stable until you're 25. Now, you know, there's also research that shows that the brain internalizes that as an actual event. So you can say, my kid knows the difference, and they might, but the brain itself does not. It internalizes that as something real. And especially the more and more real these games become, the more real the brain is saying it is.
Yeah, and you're first person shooting now. You know, it's you. Yeah. It's walking through there.
You know, and I tend to be on the opposite side of with you guys on this. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think part of the problem when people talk about these things is it's a much more narrow issue than is usually discussed. Like, we talk about this with guns all the time. There's more guns in America than there has been ever, right? There's 320 million guns. Guns have doubled in the past 20 years. At that time, the crime rate has gone in half, right? So the correlation, I think, societally, because the rise of violent video games has been in that same period, right? We went from almost no violent video games to all the ones that we have now in the same period where the crime rates have dropped by half. The issue, I guess, is more of a focus on that one kid, right? The mm-hmm. one kid who is mm-hmm. borderline, does he decide to cross a line because of some something that he's affected with playing these games? And, you know, whether you can actually manage that out, I don't know. I think it's a great... There's no reason to risk it if you're a parent. I don't know why you'd want your kids to play these games if you're a parent.
It's the sum total, I think, of everything. I want you to listen to this. This is what... Dr. James Knoll, the director of forensic psychiatry at State University of New York's Upstate Medical University, said, okay, he's a guy who's been studying these killers. Listen to what he said, because people are like, these killers are crazy. He says, no, they're not. No, they're not. Massacre killers are typically marked by what are considered personality disorders: grandiosity, resentment, self-righteousness, a sense of entitlement. They are collectors of injustice who nurture their injustice with narcissism. They preserve their egos. They exaggerate past humiliations and externalize their anger, blaming others for their frustrations. Now, let me ask, let's take this list one by one. Are we seeing in our society grandiosity?
Sure.
self-aggrandizement.
Of course.
Mm. We're seeing it everywhere.
I love the phrase collectors of injustice. What yep. a...
Right.
So perfect.
Are we seeing a society that is dwelling on resentment? Yes. Mm-hmm. Are we a society that is dwelling on self-righteousness? I'm right. You're wrong. I'm so right. You're so wrong. I won't even be your friend anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How about a sense of entitlement? Mm. How about collectors of injustice who nurture their wounded narcissism? I can't. I'm being inflicted. Pain's being inflicted on me every day because of this statue. It's all about me. Me, me, me. Mm. Collector of injustice? We are all talking about the injustice of things now. And to preserve their ego, they exaggerate past humiliations.
this might as well be our constitution at this point.
Yeah, it is. And externalize our anger. Case closed. We are a society that is becoming killers.
And you can't cure that with taking guns away. You can't cure that with taking video games away. You can't cure that with any of these things. You can ban all of it, and it's not going to change that fundamental problem with society.
Can you imagine a classroom? And this is in a really nice area of Dallas-Fort Worth, where in a high school, a fight breaks out. A pretty violent fight between two kids. So what does a teacher do? Does he jump in there and separate them and tell them, stop it, knock it off? No, he's standing over on the side with his phone, filming it, recording it, smiling. I think we have the actual, look at him.
We have him.
Look at him. I mean, they're really wailing on each other. And the teacher is just standing there.
Even the
filming
teacher,
the whole thing. He's
smiling.
He's kind of enjoying it. This is great. Look even at him beat the crap out of each other.
Somebody else is I don't
filming
know,
Snapchat, him.
Periscoping or Snapchat. Yeah. Even teachers record fights only at McKinney High School.
I mean, that's despicable. That's a broken society where a teacher doesn't intervene. Instead, he records it. I'm going to post this later on. This is it's crazy.
You say to anyone in the class that takes their phone out to record it, put your damn phone down and help.
Yeah. But the problem is we live our whole lives through the phone now, right? We don't experience anything. And we don't intervene in anything because we just want to see it later. Things we usually don't even look at later, but we want to record it and post it. We just want to show, hey, I was here. That goes to the narcissism, I think. I was here, and this was really cool. Look at how cool this was. It's crazy
stuff. It's true. We just live on these things. My wife is currently on a kick of some, like, reorganizational effort in her life in which one of the people, you know, she's got these gurus she listens to, and one of them talks about how, and I think this is completely true, that when you wake up and the first thing you do is check your iPad, check your cell phone for your, you know, your emails. And her point is essentially you're immediately going on someone else's agenda. Mm-hmm. Like the day starts with you essentially taking orders from your phone rather than you planning out your day and doing the things in the order and priority that you wish they should be done. And it's a real problem. I mean, because
it's just changed us.
It's totally changed the way. And again, it's all in a big experiment, right? I mean, we can get too excited about these things and believe that, you know, cataclysm is coming from every one of these technological changes. And societies have always done that. But it is a real fast change that might not cause cataclysm, but really should be something that we understand
and should we at least talk about it?
Yeah, talk about it.
Let's talk about it. Yeah. Let's just not dismiss it out of hand. You certainly don't dismiss the gun control out of hand, so why should we dismiss the psychological things that are happening to us and our society?
And you can't say, you know, first of all, you cannot stop technology. I don't want to censor anything.
Yeah.
And it's not one thing. Yeah. It's the entire thing. We've gone from a society that was basically gentle, decent, good, had real problems, you know, it's never a wonderland, but generally we all agreed, we all saw each other as part of the solution, not part of the problem. Mm-hmm. We trusted people, there was authority, there were standards. Those are all gone now. All of those are gone. And so the things that kept us moored even a little bit are gone. And you add on top of that the emptiness of people's lives. There's, what has value in kids' lives? What do they do that has value?
And like no other time in our history, our kids are on antidepressants. Why are they so depressed all the time?
Can I tell you something?
When did that start? I don't remember anybody on antidepressants when I was growing up.
But I tell you, Pat, there's nothing that impresses kids. There's nothing.
No, I know.
You go on a car ride, if they have electronics or a movie in the car, they're not looking outside. They've seen it. They've done it. There's no quiet time. There's no time to think. There's no time to just look. Mm-hmm. There's no time to be bored. You know what I mean?
Right.
Those are right. Important parts of your life, especially in childhood.
Great point, because, I mean, kids don't even say that anymore. Why? Because you're continually entertained by your phone or your iPad. There's no opportunity to be bored.
If your kids have electronics, think back. When's the last time they said, I'm bored?
It's a good question.
Well, the second they didn't have the electronics, they all say
Yeah,
then it's always like, yeah.
If you put a time limit on it, then you'll hear that.
Yeah. By the way, Silicon Valley parents are raising their kids now tech-free. More and more. Mm, wow. And there was a whole study in the Business Insider from the tech world. You know, the current CEO of Apple, of Microsoft, many people at Facebook, they're saying there's no electronics in the house. Kids do not have access to them.
Weird.
What do they know that we don't know?
Mm. Pat Gray Unleashed coming up on the Blaze Radio and TV networks. Also, get the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe at iTunes or wherever your podcasts are sold.
The First Amendment guarantees your right to say stupid things.
But it doesn't guarantee we have to listen to them.
Share your intelligent thoughts with Glenn and Stu through social media, at Glenn Beck and at World of Stu.
Okay, so there are a couple of things from the mass shooting in Governor Matt Bevin. The audio we played just a few minutes ago. Fantastic. Top pops, right? Most concise, accurate explanation I've seen. Well done.
Bevin's good. He's good.
Chris writes in, if he's as serious as he sounds, the guy should be president. And Daniel wrote in, you say people fear guns because they didn't grow up with them. Well, that same concept applies to video games. Violent crime has gone down at the same time game sales are up, and that's a fact. And Daniel, you're right. You're right. There are studies, however, that show that it is impacting some people. And I'm not calling for a ban of video games, and I'm not blaming this on video games. I'm saying that we are devaluing life, and some people can be affected by that. We have to look at all of the pieces. And again, I am not for banning anything. I don't believe in that.
Are you going to talk maybe next week about the struggles, if the right word, in your household when it comes to such technologies?
I am. I've been wanting to talk about it for a while. And it has gotten worse in my family, and that's why I haven't been talking about it, because it's causing some real problems in the family. And so I would like to, I want to talk about it generally next week, because it is a struggle for parents.
I think, too, like part of this is just, it's not about banning video games, but I think there is there's a good chunk of people who just assume that it's okay for their kids to be playing, and they haven't looked at what these games are, and it's just a parental thing. So, like, make sure you're making the decision that you think it's okay.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that. Maybe we'll do that Monday. I keep promising that, but this is an important one. We'll talk about that and other solutions next week.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.